everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 275, 275th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. This and all of the other episodes just like it are lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. It's kind of a weird episode here today. It seems like just yesterday we actually released the previous episode, whereas it wasn't yesterday, it was 2 days ago, but still we're kind of right up on each other. So if you missed the last episode, number 274, please feel free to stop by the Caffeination website, and you too can head on over there and find all of the episodes. So it's kind of easy and everything to get all the stuff out over there. The other reason why this is such a weird episode is because I keep falling asleep all over the house right now. I don't know why, I don't know how, but my body's doing its best at this point in time to kind of force me off into that direction, and it's just not happening. So we have things to do here tonight, and then we will head on into the sweet release of sleep. But that's not what I came to talk to you today about. We have a huge amount of stuff to talk to you about today. We have all kinds of manner of spooky stories in both the caffeine and food section and the tech cruft section. I was going to call this spooky, but we had a lot of episodes last year named spooky, so this is the Freedom Edition. Why is that? Because this is free from any mention of politics other than this little introduction we have for you here. One of the most irritating things that I've seen of late is that it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, it doesn't matter who you're reaching out to or who your friends are or anything like that, but politics is once again leading the scene. That's what everybody's talking about, it's what everybody's thinking about right now. So we figured that everybody, no matter your affiliation, was getting a little bit tired of prepared speeches, thanking people for their questions and bickering just in general. So this episode, other than this little introduction, is completely and utterly politics free, as most of them are actually, but we're doing our best to make sure that this is a I think they call this a no-spin zone. I don't even know. There's a whole bunch of stuff that this episode's not, and it's not funny at this point in time either, so we're just going to move right along for you here today. We have a huge amount of news coming into the Tech Cruft section, a decent amount backing it up in the caffeine and food section, so what better way to just start right off here then to dive right in. But before we get to everything like that, we wanted to tell you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. If you've ever been to an online meeting, you know how long it can take to set up the technology and get the meeting actually started. That's why you need the easiest online meeting service available, GoToMeeting. With GoToMeeting, you and your attendees can join a meeting in seconds without any technical headaches. You can deliver instant sales demonstrations and customer training sessions right from your computer, share presentations or programs with anyone, anywhere, and avoid the high cost of travel. You and your attendees can also use GoToMeeting integrated phone and voice over IP conferencing service to make sure everyone in your meeting is on the same page. GoToMeeting is so easy that you'll have your first meeting running in seconds. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days with unlimited meetings. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts for your free trial today. GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. We're going to dive right on into the Tech Cruft section, then we're going to head on into caffeine and food, like I said. First up, Nintendo points just won't transfer. This is a story from over at Engadget.com. One of the biggest irritations with a lot of these new services that come out is that instead of spending money, you have to spend points for things. Microsoft did it with Xbox Live Arcade. How many Microsoft points do you have? But the only thing is, Microsoft did it the right way. They implemented a point system which didn't even have a one-to-one relationship with dollars or anything like that. I think $10 is 800 points, so there's no real correlation. And they do it so that you don't feel bad about spending points because, you know, points, even though they are money, you know, it's not the same thing. And so it's not even the same kind of base 10 operation, that it's kind of a shift. I don't even know exactly how much that is. Is that like 2.1 points per, I don't even, penny or something like that? But there's a strange little conversion factor that I used to have actually sitting out. And it's a very simple equation, but basically for every 800 points, it's $10. But Microsoft made it uniform so that you can buy other things with your Microsoft points as long as you're using your Xbox Live account. So as long as you were using whatever Windows Live service account that you had, you'd be perfectly fine. Whether if you were on the computer, if you were buying a song from their music library, whatever. It was all Microsoft points. Nintendo points will not be able to make the difference, the jump, rather, between a Nintendo Wii and a Nintendo DSi. The new version of the Nintendo DS has all kinds of fun features, and one of the which is that if you'd like to buy a game for it, you can actually buy it through an online store. So you can buy like a 3,000 point card and spend everything through the DS or everything through the Wii. There's no overarching system at this point in time which is in place to allow you to use the same account for both of them or have some kind of larger pile of points that you can pull from. It's all pretty much you have to use it wherever you can. So I think they're doing it wrong. I'm not a real big fan of that kind of obfuscation. I don't like it when people make it hard to understand how much money you're actually spending. I mean, if you look at arcades and stuff like that, that's why you have to use tokens and things like that. It's a way of kind of like a lock-in for people, so that way it's like, okay, well, you already spent $20. You just haven't officially spent $20 until you've blown through 1,600 points in Microsoft. So I can't remember off the top of my head how many Nintendo points are to the dollar or what the exchange rate is there, but I would just rather prefer if you could just spend money on everything. Even if it's just you're charging up a card, you know, so rather the Microsoft points, if they did something along the lines of, okay, yeah, you have $20 in your account right now, that would be perfectly fine if they said, okay, this game's $10. But, you know, I think Nintendo is really kind of walking a fine line. They have a really interesting offering in the Nintendo Wii, and the DSi looks rather interesting as well, but they need to have an overarching account system set up, and they're just not making it there. All right, up next, again from Engadget, is over to Alert Me Warns Electronic Vampires and Kills Them Remotely. This is a huge service. One of the things that we've talked about here before on the Caffeination Podcast is vampires, hidden vampires. They're different things in your house that actually suck electricity even though you think they're off. So, like, for instance, when you leave your TV plugged in and you walk away, whether you know it or not, the TV's still using power. It's still drawing off your grid. Some machines are better than others. One of the rules we're going by here at the Caffeination Podcast right now is if something has a clock, If there's some other feature that's strapped to an appliance or something like that, and you don't need that feature, for instance, on the coffee maker, we have a clock. There's already three clocks in the kitchen, so if you don't need it, you unplug the machine just in general. So far, it's been working. Have no real measurements that we can give you based on how much energy was saved or anything, but you feel a little bit better knowing that you're not drawing power unnecessarily. Well, what this does, the Alert Me does, is it actually allows you to have a system. So it's $260 for the base system plus $17.50 a month. Then you take each smart plug, which is $43 for each plug, and if you have something plugged into it and you're drawing power when you're away from home, you can use your key fob and actually turn it off. You can go through the system online. There's a whole bunch of other different ways. So the only when I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, this is an interesting idea in that it allows you a little bit of home automation on the road. But at the same point in time, it's $17.50 a month just so that you can turn your electronics off. You know what? You'd probably be a lot better and save a lot more money if you just turned your electronics off and tried to make the extra effort. Because I'm pretty sure the one time you leave your TV on or the surround sound going or something like that is not going to equate to $17.50 worth of electricity that you've used. So I think they're pricing themselves right out of any kind of market. Oh, yeah, by the way, if you actually want to use one of the gadgets or if you want to call the service up and have something turned off, it's actually a 20-cent service charge for every time you do it. So you get nickel and dimed with this system, ungodly amount. So I don't know who would actually buy it. I mean, if anybody out there has already bought it and you have impressions, we'd be really, really fascinated to hear about it. All right, moving right along. The Turing test applicants are stepping right up again. As of 9 a.m. next Sunday, six computer programs, or quote-unquote artificial conversational entities, will answer questions posed by human volunteers at the University of Reading. So what it basically is people are going to be throwing questions at these machines, and the machines are going to respond to see if people can tell whether or not the machines are sentient, if they're thinking, if they can pass like random questions that are thrown at it as a human would. So it's kind of an interesting test, and it's one of the... I'm not sure if there's specific kinds of questions or whatever it is, but I do know that when you're talking about artificial intelligence, you're talking about programs that are AI compliant. You want to make sure that they're Turing tested to see exactly how good they are at mimicking the actual intelligence of humans. So it's kind of fun to see the whole situation in action, and they're saying that if any of these machines actually pass the test, it's going to rank right up there with the 1997 victory over Garry Kasparov by Deep Blue and the IBM team there. So it's except this is like one massive step beyond that, because Deep Blue was designed to play chess. There was nothing else Deep Blue could do. So I mean, if you asked it to start doing math problems, it would be unable to do them. So this is kind of an interesting little test that they have going here. And one of the big reasons that I'm kind of proposing or kind of pushing the information out there is, what would you ask if you had to ask one question to a computer program to try and see if you could unmask it, if you could see what it knew or find and try and invoke an emotive response possibly? What would you ask a computer? I mean, robot, whatever. Is there any question you think you would come up with? I know I personally would have a pretty hard time figuring out something to say. I mean, you could always ask, are you real? Do you think? Or something like that. It's definitely a conundrum. I'm definitely curious to see what actually happens. All right, up next, we have a great little story called Coda the Robo-Triceratops is now available. This thing is roughly $300, and they show you kids riding it. It's a 40-inch long baby Triceratops made by Play School. You know what? This is unbelievably awesome. If you remember a while ago, there was the plesiosaur robot it wasn't even a plesiosaur. I forget exactly what it was, but they were called a plio. But I do remember that they had all kinds of different little responses. They would actually be able to talk to each other and stuff like that. But the robot dinosaur, you can actually have it walk around. The thing moves. It's by Play School. It's just really kind of strange looking. I don't know what exactly the world is coming to, but Coda the Triceratops is available now. $300 is a pretty big nut to crack when you're talking about a purchase like this, and it's kind of brings into stark contrast the toys that were available even when I was a kid, and I loved dinosaurs. And I know my son loves dinosaurs, but I would never actually ask somebody to spend $300 on this, because in a year and a half, when he gets completely and utterly tired of it, by the way, that's not even saying that he's going to enjoy something like this, because when he was bought the Elmo TMX, you know, the Elmo that did all the things where it like laid down, rolled over, laughed, slammed its fist on the ground because something was so funny. When he first got it for his first birthday, he grabbed Elmo by the eyes and threw him. So I don't know what exactly he would do to a robot Triceratops, but I do know he would recognize it as a dinosaur. I don't know if he would yet accept it as an actual toy, because the kid they show you there is a little bit over actor, but if you'd like to see it in action, you can head on over to Gizmodo via the link that we have for you over at the Caffeination Podcast. Kind of interesting, but still a little bit freaky. All right, moving right along. I've been thinking about this for a while. I've often wondered why we don't have more stories about this, but this is called a SureFlap. It uses surgically implanted RFID chips to let your cat inside. Basically, a cat door with a radio collar that it can't lose. And I think they can also work for dogs and stuff like that. I like this idea. I think it's freaky that you would be able to implant something in your cats, and I want to be able to do something like that to my hand. have a door that automatically locks after you leave your house or something like that. But if you'd like to get back in, all you have to do is wave your palm over it or something like that. I think that would be pretty cool. I'd like to. That's what I'm waiting for. The cat flap is just the icing on top. It's just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. So we'll see exactly what happened. And moving right along, we have an interesting little story from over at Ogizmo. Car trips, from what I remember, of any length and time, used to be very much of a zen exercise. You used to try and occupy yourself, find something to do. You'd play different games with things that are available on the road, punch buggy, etc. There's a whole bunch of different games that I remember playing, and they were just to pass the time. They were just to kind of engage you in the world in which you were driving through, a different interesting way of pulling the outside into the car and kind of interacting with it. And then, of course, you have the seat top or the back of the seat DVD players. I know somebody who actually has a bunch of kids who, whenever they're on a decently long trip, they play a DVD. The weird thing is we gave the person's child a ride one time, and they said, well, where's the DVD player? I said, well, there's no DVD player in our car. He says, well, what am I going to do? I said, I don't know. Find something to do. You're in the back of the car. It's a half-hour trip. There should be no problems here. And the kid seemed genuinely and completely lost because there was no DVD player. So it's kind of scary when you think about it in that light, but it's interesting when you think about it in the light that we have here. This is called Carcade. It's an in-car gaming system. What the idea is that you actually hook a... this is in like a proof of concept code that's out there right now, and it might actually eventually develop into something even cooler. But basically, on one of the windows on the car, you actually clip a webcam, and as you drive past different pieces of scenery or whatnot, you can play a game where you're actually using a fake plane to actually skim over the skyline of the buildings and the different things that you see outside your window to collect stars and other kinds of points, and you kind of skim along the generally agreed upon horizon. So it's really kind of interesting, and you owe it to yourself to actually check out the video, because every once in a while, like when you drive by a building that's straight above the actual viewpoint of the camera, it pretty much just crashes your airplane. It's pretty funny. All right, moving right along, the Uncanny Valley is a strange concept, and every once in a while we talk about it. Just to give you a little bit of a background on it, Uncanny Valley is a place in which things become so lifelike, they become so close to actually resembling a real person, that they actually look horrifying based on how close they are. So it's the point at which something looks so human that you start to recognize and pick out the tiny different insignificant differences between a human and a robot, or a human and a doppelganger, if you will. And then you start to kind of realize that this thing is not human. It is of the other, so to speak. So it's kind of an interesting little literary device to kind of explain what is happening. And it seems that the fine folks over in Japan at that conference we were talking about, CEATEC, CEATEC, have not only found the Uncanny Valley but set up shop there. There's a freaky robot girl. I don't know why they decided to make the small anthropomorphic robot actually into a little girl. I don't even know if it was modeled after a real little girl, but it is really, really, really close to being human. When you look at it, it looks like there's something wrong with the little girl. And the closer you look at it, there's actually video on another one of the websites. I'm going to try and actually link that up. But when you look at it, there's something slightly off with her mouth, and the eyes are where you really lose it. It actually looks like there is something genetically wrong with this child when you see them talk, and it's actually just servos and everything. And one of the places that I actually saw it linked was even freakier beyond that. It had just the mouth and the eyes without the covering of skin on it. So it was just the robot, like Terminator kind of thing. And then they had a picture of the musculature laying on the bed, or laying on a gurney, along with this like an empty sack of skin next to it. So it was just the freakiest thing that I've seen in a while. And this is the closest thing to an Android I've ever seen. So I just wanted to pass it along because we are the spooky month. It just kind of freaked me out more so than I thought it would. All right, up next we have an interesting little story about the classic covers for your Nintendo DS cases. Nintendo DS, that fun little book-shaped gadget that's out there right now, and the oncoming DSi, have kind of a tiny little market coming in do-it-yourself kind of cases. So it, every once in a while you see really interesting little ideas, and they look basically just like pencil cases from back in the day in your school days or whatnot. But there's two little patterns that they have up here, and the person is actually selling them on Etsy. The one actually looks like an old-school Game Boy, and the other one actually looks like a Nintendo controller. So the Famicom NES, little 8-bit, you get the D-pad on one side, the A and the B button, and the start and the select in the middle. I like the Game Boy more so than the actual controller because the proportions are right. It looks like a Game Boy should have, and it's entirely sewn out of what appears to be felt. And the cases were actually sold for $13, but you can actually get both of them for $21. So it's kind of cool. If you have a DS, then you might want to consider picking that up. Up next, we have wallpaper that you can use. It's called Pixel Notes. Have you ever been searching in your office for a tiny piece of paper or something like that to write a note on? How would you like to have the walls festooned with your pieces of paper? And not just single pieces of paper, but your pieces of paper with the standard, you know, tacky but not too tacky adhesive on the one side, sticky note style paper, but 6 deep. And what the gimmick with this is it's an entire wallpaper surface covered, you know, floor to ceiling in sticky notes. The outer layer that you see is like a really light gray, and the further in you go, the further in that you actually pull the pieces of paper off, the closer you actually get to a primary color. So it goes light gray, darker gray, darker gray, darker gray, and then all the way down to like bright red. And the idea behind it is that as you pull pieces of paper off the wall, as you need to write different notes throughout your time in your office or whatnot, you're creating an ever-changing landscape of color on the wall. I love this idea. I think this is really cool. And I don't know if it actually just kind of bottoms out to the primary color, like you need to replace the wallpaper after that. But I love this idea, and if they sold it in like rolls where you could just put it around the middle of your office, I think that would be awesome. I would definitely do this to my office. I know, even though I know it would be horribly against all kinds of regulations and codes and whatnot, I'm pretty sure that this would really, really end up being used a lot. I just love the idea behind this. And you know what? It's probably easy enough to make on your own, but you'd like to support the originator of the idea. So it's called Pixel Notes, just to let you know. So it's actually 4 layers of varying gray tones and a bright primary backing. So I think, yeah, they actually display all different 4, and then the primary backing just looks to be like a standard wallpaper or something like that. So it's kind of interesting. All right, up next we have an interesting and yet another spooky article on a gargoyle light. It's called a Merciless Gargoyle Wall Sculpture. I don't know what else to say other than it's a rather freaky gargoyle who is popping out of your wall holding a lighted orb. So if you too would like to get a rather scary looking gargoyle popping out of your wall holding a lighted orb, and you have roughly $98.95, then you too can head on over there and check this out. I thought it was cool. It kind of fit in with the whole Halloween situation, but at the same point in time, it's a little too grotesque, sort of. I don't even know if grotesque is the correct word to use there, because it's not entirely disgusting. It's just very graphic in its representation of what it thought a gargoyle is. So it's kind of really out there. I'm much more in line with the with the much more sedate gargoyles. I'm fine if they're looking nasty, but as long as they have like smoother lines on their face, I think they're much more gargoyle-ish. This looks more like a sculpture from fantasy, so it's just a little preferential thing there. All right, moving right along. Indoor ice climbing. This is from over at pruned.blogspot.com. This is a fantastic, strange set of pictures. And what it looks like is there is a... And the only reason I can say this is that there's some information in the comments below, but what it appears to be a silo, like a parking silo in Sweden, and there's some kind of ruptured water main at the top, whether it's on purpose or not. And then there's these massive, we're talking like a third of the actual parking garage is kind of taken up with this ice tower that's kind of going up. So it's frozen all the way up. Now there's some discussion on whether or not that this, the inside the tower is done like this so that there's actually ice climbing competitions that are held indoors on this. You know, you can do ice climbing on glaciers and stuff like that, but I'm pretty sure it's a lot easier to do on man-made structures because you're not actually harming the environment while you're rocking up an ice face. So it's kind of interesting to see. It's a relatively interesting article, but it's at the same point in time, there's just a little bit more information that I would love to have from it. So I wanted to pass it along because the pictures alone are stunning. So I just wanted to hopefully maybe somebody else has some more information on it and we can kind of get a little bit more out there. But I'm just passing along. All right, up next, the second to last story we have here. This is a totally cool story, significant because if you head on over to totallycooltech.com, you'll find Norbert Davis, the originator of the story, at least to me. Norbert's a really great guy, and every once in a while he comes across things and he just shares them with me. And his website, totallycooltech.com, is where you can find a whole bunch of great gadgets and gizmos and stuff like that that he reviews at least one a day. He has a great podcast. I'd highly suggest you head on over there. And one of the things that he sent my direction today is a Dismember Me plush zombie from over at thinkgeek.com. And he did it because that went, for some reason, I don't know why, but everybody thinks of zombies. They think of the Caffeination Podcast. It's quite possible because we have our own zombie plan, and I think you too should have your own zombie plan. So you just do a search on the Google for Caffeination Zombie Plan. You'll come up with our very own zombie plan poster, but that's not what we came to talk to you about here today. We came to talk about you with the Dismember Me plush zombie, and what this thing is a completely removable and interchangeable part, so all of the both arms come off, both legs come off, the head comes off, and there's even a tiny little sack of brains. And the funny thing is, where the torso is, if you actually pull, the thing actually literally gets dismembered, and there's fun entrails that come out. It's very, very cute, and for only $14.99, you too can get your own cuddle up with the undead kind of solution. And I gotta love ThinkGeek's impromptu, or I don't even know if they're really impromptu, their ads. They actually create ads, put them on YouTube, and it's a bunch of their staff members acting things out. So there's a fun little zombie action flick at the bottom where you have different staff members acting things out. So, you know, thank you very much to Norbert for passing this along, and this just looks awesome. I would love to have one of these in the office just for no apparent reason other than to have my very own zombie. All right, moving right along. Last little story that we got for you here at the Caffeination Podcast in the realm of TechCrunch is only you and Google can stop drunk emailing. Everybody's talking about this right now. Google Mail Google's Mail Goggles prevents drunk emailing is the title from over at the Wired blog. But basically, Google has a lab feature, or Gmail rather, has a labs feature which allows you to try out a whole bunch of different and interesting plugins for Gmail. For instance, in work and at home, I have installed the Take a Break plugin, which is basically when you click it, you can't get back into Gmail for 15 minutes. It actually wipes out your screen. If you really had to get in, you could just log out and log back in or open up a new browser session. That would be no problem. But it kind of is a way to force you off of checking your email incessantly. That's kind of an interesting idea. What this is, the Mail Goggles actually puts a series of equations up on the screen, and these are all incredibly easy, and I've shown this to a couple of people. I've gotten drunk emails from a different number of people, and I've been known every once in a while to send one myself. So what this is an extra step in between you and your reply all button. So it's kind of interesting, and they're not terribly difficult. I'd like to see like if you could bump up the level of difficulty, because I know a bunch of people are math whizzes. Not even that you need to be a math whiz to actually do this, because you know, at least with me, numbers kind of swim in front of my face, so if I'm not really concentrated on it, you know, I might not be able to send one on a normal basis. So, you know, not saying that the equations this simple would actually confuse me, but they would cause me to pause and wait a couple seconds, say, okay, this is the answer to that, got that right. You know, I think it would be even funnier is if you got it wrong, it would log you out. That would be pretty funny. So, all right, that about wraps it up for the TechCrunch section. session here at the Caffeination Podcast. Just want to give you a quick rundown on things before we headed on into the caffeine and food section. If you were listening to this on the stream over the Tech Podcast Network or anywhere else, you too can find it at www.caffeination.com. If you've noted a factual inaccuracy or any other kind of inaccuracy, or you think we're just playing off our rocker, please feel free to email me comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail over to caffeination@gmail.com. Any and all of your other questions can be answered by stopping by the lovely Caffeination homepage over at www.caffeination.com and clicking the listings support or any other one of the buttons that's up at the top. I highly suggest checking out the recipes. Just a little tip for you. All right, we have a little bit of caffeine and food section, then we'll head you on out on your way. Up first, we have a selection of horror. They're called Horror Hangovers, 10 Scary Party Drinks for Halloween, and they kind of break them down as follows. They're 3 beers, 3 wines, 3 drink mixes, and then 1 punch. So I like this idea. Every once in a while, I'll actually link up a rundown list from over at TrendHunter.com. So they have Dead Guy Ale, Hobgoblin Ale, and The Beast. I don't know if The Beast is actually the same thing as Beast from my college days, which is like Natty Ice or something like that. But then they have Hocus Pocus Wine, Vampire Wine, Bats Rock. They have Bloody Eyeball Martini, the Midori Green Goblin's Brew, which I've actually tried, and the Black Widow. And then for Punch, you have Icy Hands Halloween Punch. So it's kind of an interesting little mix of different alcoholic beverages that you too can create in your own little style of Halloween. So I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty cool. All right, up next, we have tea that is out of this world. I don't know why they didn't actually pick up on that. You know, their title is UFO Teapot, Let's Make Some Effing Tea. I don't understand why they had to go there. I don't understand why they didn't just use the out of this world tagline. Because, I mean, this teapot is rife with that possibility. And I don't know. this would actually really, really find a home in my kitchen. I love this idea. I think it's great. The only problem is it's an $80 UFO teapot. So, but it's an all porcelain ceramic teapot rather. So this is an old school like regular style teapot. You need to heat the water elsewhere, pour it in here with the tea to actually mix it ahead of time, and then pour it out into whatever vessels you would like. So I like it. And it would definitely find a place within the caffeination layer. Just a little too expensive for our blood at this point, right? So I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was that awesome to do so. All right, moving right along, we have the Ice Bullet. Now, I think everybody has seen some kind of cop show where somebody gets shot with something and they can't find the bullet, but there's a weird stain of or a weird puddle on the ground or something like that. And they find out later that he was shot with a bullet made of ice. Now you too can make your very own AK-47 ice bullets with a lovely cartridge or a lovely clip that actually allows you to create them. I think this is pretty cool. Basically, it's two ice cube molds that actually kind of lay together and fit in relatively snugly. I don't know if you have to actually start the ice cube process in order to actually close it up or if there's a way to fill it up while it's closed, but I think it's a real, really cool way. It's a silicone clip so you can actually bend them and pop the ice cubes right out. And I think they had to use no small amount of jury rigging to actually make the ice cubes look as smooth and cool as they do in the product shot there. But it doesn't look like it would be too expensive, so I just thought it would be kind of cool. And these are probably not the thing that you want to just casually drop into somebody's drink because you don't know the reaction that you would get, but I think it's pretty cool nonetheless. All right, moving right along, fake paper cups with real beverage devices. This is from over at whatonearth.com. It's a catalog that's out there. It's one of the things that I think we may have talked about this before, but this is the first time I've ever seen it actually listed. It's roughly the size of a paper cup. It's roughly the size of a small paper cup from a national coffee chain. And it's completely and utterly reusable, which is pretty cool. And what it is a porcelain cup with a silicone lid, and it looks exactly like a paper cup. The only problem I would have is I'm clumsy and I would drop it. It's $20, and it's called I'm Not a Paper Cup. So I just thought it was kind of cool and wanted to pass it along to everybody out there, because I think this is a really interesting product. I think this is one of those ones where you could actually hand it to a staff at a coffee shop, and they would say, "But you're not allowed to refill," or something like that. And then they'd feel the heft of the cup and say, "Oh, okay." But I'm pretty sure more often than not, if you hand something somebody something that looks like a paper cup, and as soon as they get it, they're going to handle it as such until they feel the weight and the heft of it, so they might not actually have a good enough grasp on it. All right, and the second to last thing that we have for you here at the Caffeination Podcast is coaster with a fun little effect on it, also from the What on Earth catalog. It's what looks like a gentleman who's fallen down on the ground, and as he splatted, you can put your cup on the flatter parts of his body. So I just thought it was pretty fun. It's a silicone little coaster, and I just wanted to kind of pass it along because I thought it was that cool. They also have a pen holder, which is a guy laying on the ground, and right where his heart is, there's a little spot for a pen to hold. So they have a bunch of little fun things out there, and I can't even remember how I got onto that catalog, but there's a bunch of tiny little fun things that are listed over right there. And then the last little thing that we have for you here at the caffeine and food section of the Caffeination Podcast is I was recently attempting to try Diet Pepsi Max, and the only reason I tried this is because over at Temple recently they had a lovely little get out the vote seminar, and I told you that we weren't going to be talking about politics, and we're not. They had the Democrats on one side of the thing, they had the Republicans on the other side of the bell tower on campus, and they were both trying to get everybody to register to vote, because basically the deadline to register for to vote was the 4th in Pennsylvania. I think we're one of the earlier states on that one. Then right in the middle of them, for some reason, there was a booth set up with Diet Pepsi Max. In fact, the Diet Pepsi people had canvassed the campus more effectively than either of the political parties, and you saw more people walking around with Diet Pepsis in their hands than you saw walking around with buttons for either candidate or any kind of literature at all. So, you know what? I too, also voted for Diet Pepsi Max, mainly because I had already registered to vote, but I just thought it was kind of fun to see how they were out there at the same time, and I walked up to the guy and said, "You know what? I'm going to vote for Pepsi," and he said, "You know how many people have walked up and said that? I think we have a good platform we're running on here," and the idea behind these is supposed to compete with Coke Zero, so there's no calories, no sugar, no anything, and usually when you have that, I'm kind of... I would consider the taste suspect. And in my own opinion, I used to enjoy Pepsi more than Coke. I don't like soda very much anymore, so I was kind of hesitant to drink it because I don't like the syrupy, heavy taste of soda anymore. It just, since I haven't been drinking it in a while, it hasn't really kind of hit on with me. So there's a little bit of ginseng in there for God only knows what reason. And you know what? It was actually really a refreshing soda. I was kind of very much taken aback by it. It was light. There was no heavy aftertaste. There was no strange aftertaste, which is even the better part. So the artificial sweetener, whatever they happened to use, kind of stayed where it was supposed to. It made the beverage sweet. It made it light and no calories and everything. So I would endorse it. If you have to drink soda, it's probably a good way to go. However, you do need to be aware that Diet Pepsi Max actually has twice the caffeine of any other kind of Pepsi, which is probably one of the reasons I liked it so much. But you know, if I had to buy soda, I'd probably pick one of them up. All right, that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. I'd like to thank you very much for sticking with us on this show. It's kind of a loose format. We're trying to beat it into submission here. I got to do a lot of editing before it heads up and out the door. But thank you so much for listening. This has been Caffeination number 275, the Freedom Edition here. So thank you very much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.